Welcome to the Corporate Treasury 101 podcast. In today's episode, we discuss operational excellence through cash management with Alexander Fleischmann from Nomentia. Alexander is a seasoned market development executive at Nomentia who is dedicated to revolutionizing corporate treasury operations. Nomentia is at the forefront of modernizing treasury management processes with its innovative SaaS-based cash and treasury management system. In the episode of today, expect to learn how does cash flow forecasting empower modern treasury management, how does Nomentia ensures top-notch talent drives innovative solutions for clients, what benefits does implementing cash management with an in-house bank offer, and how does it streamline liquidity management for business, what are the advantages of implementing an in-house bank for cash management, and how does it benefit organizations, and like always, much, much more. I love to go through real case studies that demonstrate that theory sometimes indeed works in reality, and this is exactly what we did with Alex. We really hope you will enjoy the episode. If that is the case, and when you're thinking about how you found our podcast, chances are that it was through word of mouth, social media, or a recommendation from your favorite podcast platform. And this is our only request to you. The best way you can support the podcast, wherever you're listening to this, is to head to Apple Podcasts, search for Corporate Treasury 101 and give us a 5-star review. That will mean the world to us and help more people learn about treasury. And with all that being said, please welcome Alexander Fleischmann. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the Corporate Treasury 101 podcast. We're going to talk today about different use cases and different treasury stories, should I say. And I would like to start by a cash flow forecasting one. So maybe to begin with and start broad, can you tell us about the importance of cash flow forecasting in modern treasury management?
Yeah, first of all, Guillaume, it's great to be here, great to be with you. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Pleasure.
If you think about it, I would go as far as to say the single most important task of a corporate treasurer in any company is to ensure the company's liquidity, right? So looking at the question, modern treasury management, I would really say whenever there's a treasurer, you know, that's the single most important task, period. You can really forget about FX hedging. You can forget about optimizing your cash management. You can forget about payments. If you run out of cash, that was it. You're done. Right? And that applies for a group treasurer, that applies on the level of each individual entity and the group as a whole. So I think that's kind of to kick it off. I wanted to get that out of the way. And I think that's also why cash flow forecasting, if you look at these rankings that come out pretty much every year end or every first quarter, the priorities of corporate treasurers in the new year, it's always way up there. It's always in the, maybe not always number one, but let's say in the top three. And I guess that won't change, honestly. I think this will stay this way for the next 20 years to come, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. And I think to name some of them, because we've been, so obviously I was close to PwC, and PwC released a bi-yearly global treasury survey, and cash flow forecasting, as you very rightly mentioned, is always in the top three. And this year, again, for the X years in a row, is top one, simply. But so for treasurers, but also for CFOs, meaning it's not only from the eye of the treasurer, but also their leadership is like, no, number one priority for me is, where is my cash? Yep. What can we expect from the coming weeks, and how do we handle that? So I think that's very rightly put, and makes a lot of sense. So we've talked a bit, Alex, obviously, and you mentioned to me Lufthansa's rapid implementation during the COVID period. So how crucial are flexibility and speed in the implementation of such solutions?
So, in a very small nutshell, I would say very crucial, but maybe first let me say I'm not spilling any secrets here, right? So we were fortunate that the Lufthansa team, they already presented this case a couple of years ago in a public treasury event. So everything I share is public knowledge. And also we've had the pleasure of having Lufthansa and having the treasury team at Lufthansa as a client for almost 20 years now. They have given us their trust from the very early days of our company. And so to be precise, what Lufthansa achieved was less of an implementation, but more a complete overhaul of their existing cash flow forecasting structure. And why did they have to do that? You mentioned worldwide pandemic. It was the COVID crisis that hit everybody pretty much unprepared. The same, of course, applied to Lufthansa being an airline. So what they started off with in terms of cash flow forecasting was a pre-pandemic, the sun is shining, a rolling forecast on a monthly intervals and looking more than 2 years into the future. That's what they had in place in Numancia when COVID hit. And then the pandemic hit us all. The plane stayed on the ground. The ticket sales dropped. Everybody could read that in the newspapers. And essentially what they needed was a more frequently updated, shorter time horizon forecast in a different structure. So they managed to translate the forecast that went more than 2 years into the future. They changed it into a rolling 13-week forecast, updated it weekly, and doesn't take much to imagine what this must have meant under the eyes of everybody. You know, it was on the news. The banks, of course, wanted to know, well, how are things looking? What are the financing needs, really? The government wanted to know. So basically, the entire nation was watching. And Lufthansa managed to pull that off in 6 working days. So single digit, 6 working days, 1 week. Now, of course, the huge benefit that Lufthansa had was they knew the solution. Yeah, they were power users in our tool already, a very senior team, experienced treasurers. But still, yeah, going back to your question, speed and flexibility are crucial. They were very experienced, but still the tool allowed them to change all of that in a high pressure environment in a matter of days. Yeah. And I would say amazing. I mean, what we achieved together, yeah, but kudos to them because a lot of the work was done by them totally on their own. Yeah. But still, that's what we see time and time again when we start a project. You don't need to do everything at once. Not everything needs to be implemented in a matter of a week, but you need to get started fast and you need to be able to change things quickly if they need to be changed. I think that's maybe a quick summary of this case. Yeah.
100%. And I really like the story of that Lufthansa. And so implementation, and you've put the right caveat, right? They were already users of the platform, but it really emphasizes how certain functions that's in a normal environment, a normal ecosystem, a normal worldwide context, which was probably December 2019, and all of a sudden everything changes and you're like, okay, it's critical that we have the information about this right now. It's critical that we know where is our cash, what can we expect, and how do we adapt accordingly? Like, it's not just, hey, we don't have a clear visibility on our revenues for the next 2 years as we are used to for the last 20 years, but it's like, what is happening next month? Okay, we need to have visibility because our stakeholders, our lenders, our creditors, everybody needs to know, we need to know to be able to manage the business, right? So that's a very interesting, and 6 working days is absolutely, absolutely insane. Pardon my French, it's really impressive. Back from my consulting days, I know how long an implementation of any tool, right, can take. So six working days is quite impressive. So speaking of which, Alex, how do you at Numancia, you mentioned it a few times, but I'm interested into digging a little bit more into that. How do you guys approach talent, knowledge, considering that the team at Nomensha, but also as a lot of places, right? Not only system implementation of system vendors, but also treasury teams. You have a team that comprises senior people with extensive treasury experience, but also younger people. So how do you approach globally this whole aspect of talent and knowledge, especially when it comes to something as critical as cash flow forecasting and the solutions that need to be provided to the treasurers nowadays, especially the period of high interest rates, post-pandemic, everything, you name it. How do you manage that?
I think that's a very good question, especially when we read on the news and hear on the news regularly that there's a lack of talent, there's a lack of people, of qualified staff, pretty much in every industry. So we face the same challenges. But I think what we were able to achieve since the very beginning of our company is that we were able to retain good people. Right. So if I take a look at our consulting team, our professional services team, many of them have been with the company for 10 plus years. Myself, I started almost 15 years ago with what today is called Nomensha. Why is that? Because it's still fun. I still like it, but especially the atmosphere. Yeah. I think before we get to the topics like knowledge transfer and internal training and external training and training on the job, that's all important, but you need to have a feeling that you're part of a team. You can communicate on eye level. I know open door. Yeah. It's kind of a buzzword, the open door policy, but personally, I really appreciate that when I want to ask a question to our CEO, I know I can probably talk to him in 30 minutes if he's free, you know? And I think that is something, don't get me wrong, yeah, if you're looking at a multinational with 90,000 employees, I think this is not a realistic demand that you can have, but I think for us...
A bit trickier.
Definitely a bit trickier, but I think for us at Nomensha, this is on different levels. Yeah, that's just the way it is. At the same time, we're growing, we're hiring, so we also manage to get new talent on board. And I think very quickly they get a grip of that atmosphere. And yeah, of course, then when you onboard new people, it's about knowledge transfers. Yeah, so we have regular internal trainings, external seminars, in which we also rely on established treasury consultancies, right, to get the people to a certain level of a general understanding of what it is a treasurer does, what it is we do. And yeah, and then it's really on the job training. You need to get the people out there, work on projects, but then let them know, hey, if you have a question, ask. Yeah, most important thing is to ask questions.
Yeah, I really like what you said. Well, like I can really relate to what you said at the beginning, especially in regards to the lack of talent and how precious it is to train well your people, but also retain them. Not at any cost, obviously, because there needs to be a win-win situation, right? Like always. But that's a thing we hear a lot from the treasurers and I mean all the gravitating people around treasury, but also externally, like there is a lack of talent in treasury. And I would say, you mentioned like any industry, it's true. I would say maybe even more in treasury. And it's not to say, hey, treasury, wow, we are the best. It's more like, this particular topic on the contrary, but it's really... There is no treasury degree. It's not like you can get a master in treasury management. You have some treasury modules, part of certain finance degrees, but you need to go and find the right university, which is maybe one in Europe and one in the US. So this lack of talent is really something everybody can relate to. So hence the importance of being able to retain the people, to transfer the knowledge, and to make the link back to cash flow forecasting. Cash flow forecasting is something that is constantly evolving. It's number one priority, yet it's constantly evolving because you have new technology arriving, you have AI arriving, you have everything that affects cash flow forecasting. You have circumstances that make it more or less relevant, lately more like more relevant. So super important to have the right people that are here, that are trained, and that are here on a long period of time with on-the-field experience, as you mentioned, Alex. To maybe close this, close the chapter on cash flow forecasting, and I just mentioned it quickly, AI, but I'm interested to have your take on it. So would you say that predictive analytics and neural network are part of your approach to cash flow forecasting? And if yes, how do you utilize them? What's the strategy there?
Neural networks, predictive analytics, AI, also topics, of course, that are very relevant for us, become increasingly relevant and have become more and more relevant over the last couple of years. I would say that today we are in a position to deploy our predictive features, predictive analytics tool sets pretty much as an out-of-the-box offering, meaning we can get to work very fast and deliver first results quickly. What do I mean by that? Over the last couple of years, we have built a growing repository of different models, neural networks being one of them, integrated in our cash flow forecasting solution. So there are things like linear regression models, time series analysis, ARIMA, Profit, XG Boost. So I could list a few more here, but I'm not a data scientist, so I don't know the details behind all of this number crunching. But the good news is, in our approach, the treasurer also doesn't have to be a data scientist. Yeah? So what we wanted to offer is a solution where we take care of the initial data analysis, meaning data evaluation, preparation, calibrating the model, validating the first results, all the way until the first prediction is created. So we didn't want to create the black box. We didn't want to say, here's the result of our magic bullets TMS. Be happy with it. But also, if we look at what we typically do in projects, it's more we create a pilot. You start off with one or two entities, maybe major entities, the large ones, typically the ones where the treasury team has the most experience with the data and the cash flows. And then we build a predictive forecast for these one or two entities. And we compare the results with the results of the traditional forecast. Yeah, so it's kind of a getting familiar with the concept of a prediction rather than just throwing it out there and saying, deal with it. Yeah? But maybe if you allow me one more comment on that, the key factor in all of that, because there's a lot of talk about predictive and AI, but still the key factor is we need data. We need proper, high quality, actual cash flow information, ideally a couple of years back. And I think that ties very nicely into this pandemic example. If, imagine, the pandemic just stopped, the world is back to normal again. Imagine you only had 2 years of data at that point. Yeah? Any prediction would be rubbish because your normal would be the COVID pandemic. Yeah? So ideally, it should be 4 years to properly train a predictive model to get to any meaningful results. Yeah? But definitely a topic that is here to stay and something that we plan on rolling out a lot more frequently in 2024 and beyond.
Wow, Alex, let me tell you that you're the first one who, that we talk to, that puts a clear caveat to the use of AI. Because, treasurers are risk averse, right? That's a bit the job, right? By design, you need to be risk averse because you're the custodian of cash and you need to mitigate risk and so on. However, AI is all the hype and we're like, okay, you need to use AI and this and that and we can do this and we can do that. You're the first one who explains me exactly why. First of all, you need proper data behind it. And I really like that because AI might be ready to do certain stuff, but are the data behind it ready? Because we had a guest on the show saying as well, like the AI predictive model, or the AI whatever result you're going to get is only going to be as good as the data you give it. But he didn't emphasize on the importance of the historical data. Like, you need to train your model with your own data from your company because A, you don't want to get those data out. This is really like company information that are super critical. But B, you want to train the very model to your own need and your own company. And here you just pinpointed why we need correct data for like a couple of years and why right now it might not be the best moment to implement AI because the last 2 years of cash flow forecasting and cash data you have might be a bit affected by COVID and any other worldwide conflict and so on and so forth. So super interesting. And thanks a lot for putting that into the spotlight. So I really like the approach of telling a story to break down a topic. Let's move on to cash management, especially with the use of an in-house bank. And first of all, let's discuss the concept of cash management with an in-house bank. How does this benefit organizations from what you've seen?
Maybe let's stop again for a second and look a bit at the definition of an in-house bank, right? Because otherwise I feel it's very much a deep dive immediately. So definitely more than one definition of an in-house bank out there, but I think by and large, you could say an in-house bank does exactly what any other bank does, an external bank, if you want, provides banking services. Now, of course, that was a no-brainer, yeah? But instead of procuring these services from an external partner, an internal entity, the in-house bank, group treasury, is used. And I think depending on the scope of these services, yeah, again, I don't know so many companies that provide all potential services via an in-house bank. There are a few out there who have a very large scope, but depending on the scope of services, there can be a number of different benefits across the spectrum of corporate treasury. One of the typical use cases, and I would say one with which many corporate treasurers start, is payments, cash management. For example, why should I pay an external bank to transfer money from my left pocket to my right pocket? Yeah? Intercompany payments, going from one of my bank accounts to another one, paying my bank for doing that doesn't really make a lot of sense. Yeah? So here we talk about, well, removing the man in the middle, removing the external bank, and rather than paying the respective intercompany transaction, just posting the resulting, if you want, loan or deposit, right? Or credit and debit transfer on in-house bank accounts. What is the benefit? You reduce fees. If you follow this idea, you can reduce the number of bank accounts eventually. And that's already a very significant thing, because I talked to two different corporates not too long ago about the cost of managing a bank account. And they had different numbers, but both of them said, well, our internal cost that we assign to every bank account we manage per year is 5,000 euros. That was one guy's answer. The other said 7,000 euros and up. Right. So every bank account that you can get rid of, it's a good thing for different reasons, but not the least for cost reasons. Yeah. And then you can move on from there. Yeah. Thinking about a payment factory. So if you move to the next step of also looking at external payments, you could look at triggering these, initiating these, not from individual entity bank accounts, but from a centrally owned bank account. And if this bank account is located in a, let's say, in a good location, for example, if you want to trigger your euro payments group wide, probably makes sense to do that from Germany rather than Italy or Spain, because historically Germany has quite low transaction fees. So things like that, you can start somewhere and then go from there. Yeah, to just use one or two initial examples.
Yeah, I would like to. So that's really good, and I like the analogy with the right and the left pockets. I would maybe add to that lending. Like, yeah. Probably one of the most basic structure of cash management is setting up some form of cash pooling. And as soon as you do that, not only do you have a better visibility over your cash, which is a very good reason to do it, but on top of that, you could be like, exactly for the why should I pay somebody to move money from my left pocket to my right pocket? Well, what if that's just a lending, a loan? Like I intend on returning it back to my left pocket. Well, you could do that with an in-house bank as well.
Exactly. Creating,
lending to an entity with the excess cash of another entity. And all of a sudden, you don't pay interest rates. You don't pay the whole shebang that needs to accompany a loan, but you just do it internally. Yeah. it comes with a certain system and so on behind it, but I like that pretty much. So walk us through a use case to highlight the importance of this, Alex. I think we talked about GLS logistics. Can you please elaborate on what was their specific need and how you came and helped them manage the in-house bank accounts, cash pool, and interest rate that came with that need?
Yeah, and thanks for adding that. Yeah, you know, whenever the topic is about in-house banking, also myself, I tend to look at the advanced use cases already. But in a nutshell, as soon as you set up a cash pool, you need some kind of in-house bank structure, or at least an in-house bank or intercompany bank account structure to record what's going on in the cash pool. And that's exactly what we did first with GLS Logistics. And before I provide a few more details, let me start off by saying that we are not done yet at GLS Logistics. Yeah, we're still in the middle of the implementation, working together with Hermann van Hazendonk, the group treasurer there, Hermann and his team. So while it's not yet the time to present a massive success story, I think still GLS is an excellent case to illustrate a few common themes that we encounter time and time again. And that's basically the tendency, or even the, I would say, the recommendation to start small, as you just described. Yeah? Establish the basis. Can be creating cash visibility. Connect to your banks. Pull in the account statements. How much cash do I have where today? Meaning in which entities, in which countries, held with which banks. That's an excellent step number one. Step number two, on top of that, a cash flow forecast. And that's precisely what Hermann at GLS approached us with. He said, hey, he just started there as a treasurer at GLS, and he wanted to put a solution in place. So he looked into the cash pooling structures. He was about to build the cash pooling. So yes, in the first step, it was about setting up in-house bank accounts, set up the posting rules to identify these cash pool transfers, yeah? Identify intercompany payments to post them on these intercompany in-house bank accounts as well. And why I like the GLS example is that, a bit atypical, but when we started talking, Hermann had already made up his mind and the decision for a payments tool was already taken. So of course, we would have preferred the other way, doing everything, so also taking care of the payments there. But we immediately said, no problem. Yeah, and I think this is also an approach that has a future, the so-called best of breed. Yeah? I think this is also here to stay. So we said, okay, you picked your payments tool. That's just fine. Yeah, we know the guys at the other vendor. We have worked with them successfully for many years. We have an API in place. So they collect the statements. They send the payments. We get the information for our purposes. And it's all good. And maybe a fun fact, I remember a message exchange with Hermann during the first days of our project, and he wrote me on Microsoft Teams and he said, well, guys, I have the account statements here. I have them sitting here account by account in my bank connectivity tool, my payments tool. I know how to set up the integration. It's pretty easy. Are you ready? Can I already send it over to you? And that's kind of, I really liked that exchange because it highlighted the expectation of a modern treasurer is that they can configure the tools themselves, even the integration bit, even talking to another system. Yeah? They don't want to still call their solution provider. And it's all there. It's possible today. Yeah, that, I think that's how it should be. So I really liked it. Yeah? I think one day later, we were able to accept his bank statements. They ended up on our end, found their way to the cash position that we were building at that time. So yeah. Start small and build from there.
There is a lot to unpack here, Alex. I like that a lot. The last thing you mentioned, it makes me think of how, as a system vendor, as a business, right, how to make it so easy for the user that they will come to you for more by themselves, because they're like, hey, I'm done with this and I did that. And so I've tackled problem number one and problem number two on my list. But hey, what about problem number three? I'm still having that issue that I need somebody to help me on, but like, how do we get there? And that perfectly highlights it. Like, the easier you make it for the end user, which in your case is the treasurer, the better, well, first of all, the better the experience with your product and with your services. But thereafter, like, hey, it was so easy and so fast on that one side of the problem that how about do we tackle that next? That's really, really good. And that links with the start small. But then my question is, and then what? How do you help treasurers once they've started small to get to the next step? And if we look at the next step, maybe overall the treasury roadmap, like every treasurer that is slightly in a kind of transformation period, which doesn't take, I mean, in the case of Lufthansa, it was 6 days. It's pretty fast, but not every treasury department migrate from system and do their whole treasury transformation in 6 days. It usually takes months, if not years. How do you help treasurers navigate that treasury roadmap and include additional functions and countries whilst tailoring everything for their specific need? Because I suspect every client is different. So how do you do that?
Really? Yeah, that's a perfect intro. Every client is different. But yet, for the past almost 30 years, we followed the same approach in helping them establish and then follow through with their treasury roadmaps. And the first step, it all starts with the scoping. Now, there's a scoping as a key initial project step for the initial implementation. But then as we go along, there are additional scopings depending on the tasks at hand. So if we stay with this topic of bank connectivity and payments, for example, yeah, in most cases, we don't do a big bang here. Yeah, we cut the cake into different pieces, typically country by country or region by region. Why? Because the specifics, the country or regional specifics in payments, they are the same across the different banks. Yeah? Typically, there's a tendency for treasurers to want to start closer to their home turf. Yeah, so you may want to try and connect the exotic bank that you have in India, maybe in a phase three, but not immediately as a, let's say, a quick win in phase one. So I would say there are some natural progressions in order to put these things on a timeline. Scoping is key at the very beginning to define the functional requirements that need to be implemented, but also manage expectations in terms of timing. Another aspect, maybe if we move away from payments and cash management and back to forecasting and beyond, another very natural progression that we encounter regularly in our projects is between or from cash flow forecasting to FX exposure management. Of course, it's a valid approach to say, I want to completely hedge my exposures that I have in my books, that I have today, that I find in my ERP, because that's what impacts me, no doubt. However, any complete analysis of FX exposures is incomplete if you just forget about the future, forget about the cash flows you expect in 3 months, in 6 months, in 8 months. Yeah? But unless you have a solid cash flow forecast in place that ideally provides you with cash flow information currency by currency, we often call it currency differentiated forecast. Yeah? You really forecast cash in the currency in which you expect your in and outflows. Unless you have that, it doesn't really make sense to come up with a super sophisticated and automated hedging approach, at least not for future cash flows, right? So that, again, that's why in our projects, we typically sit down with treasurers and say, hey, phase one is the forecast. From experience, you will need a couple of forecast rounds until the data is solid. And then let's approach automating FX exposure and risk management. Then let's approach automated hash proposals that you can forward to your trading platform. Yeah. So maybe two examples to illustrate. There's no wrong or right, but some items just flow naturally, yeah, from one to the other.
So that makes me think to the English expression that if I'm great is something around the lines of don't put the cart before the horses. And that's exactly what you're mentioning here. And it's not only start small, but also start smart. Like you might think my biggest problem is my FX loss because my CFO came to me at year-end closing last year. And it'll be, what the heck is this 100 million loss in FX, in FX results? Like, yeah, well, but to prevent that, of course, first of all, happy to tackle it, happy to have the right resources to put something in place, but I also need this and that in order to make that work. So it's not only problem number one, but what's underneath problem number one and how can we solve it? Very, very interesting. Something we've not talked about so far on the podcast, Alex, yet something so critical to a treasury function, because so it's all about the work that we do, obviously, and like how do we manage cash, how do we mitigate risk, how do we eventually become a strategic partner rather than just a cost center. Yet one of the things that represents that is how well we report to leadership and to the different stakeholders, like, hey, this is our exposure, this is what we faced, and this is how we tackle it, and those are the results. And here I want to talk about treasury reporting. So moving to that, you've indicated that Numentia's infrastructure is based on Microsoft Azure, I think. That's
right.
You told us in a previous call. How does that work? Why that particular platform? Like, tell me the ins and outs, because I'm actually super curious. I don't know what Microsoft Azure is exactly. Talk to me like a neophyte. And explain me what is that and how it enhances the treasury reporting that you're able to provide to the treasurers.
Happy to do that. So basically, in a nutshell, Microsoft Azure is a cloud, just like Amazon Web Services and several other ones out there. So Microsoft provides cloud services to us. So that's the cloud all Numentia solutions now run on. To be super precise, we do have a set of existing customers that still run on another cloud, and we're currently migrating these over the next couple of months, 1 or 2 years, to our Azure infrastructure. And the benefit of that is, from a reporting perspective, is it's highly secure. Of course, there's all relevant certifications around it. So step one, the data is safe. Second element, if you look at the corporate challenges that are out there, one of the main challenges, you mentioned it, is reporting. Because time and time again, we talk to treasurers and we find a situation where there is a lot of data. Yeah, there's data in a TMS, there's data in the ERP. Maybe there's even interfaces between the two already. And so you sit on a big lake of data, a big amount of data. But it's very hard to translate that into meaningful reports, analysis, dashboards. Yeah? I do think some vendors do a better job than other ones in this area. But even though it's 2024, if you look into some treasury management solutions, you still come across pie charts. And now that's only my very personal opinion, but I think nothing valuable ever came from looking at a pie chart. Yeah? So that's just my personal, I don't know, whenever I see a pie chart, I already am very skeptical, because usually they don't transport a lot of information. Yeah? Yet sometimes this is all you get from your TMS vendor, even in 2024. So what we are trying to do is basically a free pillar model. We also have a set of base reports in our solution. They are there from day one. They don't look necessarily super pretty all the time, but there are no pie charts, yeah, usually, but they just help you to get started quickly. Second pillar, tailor-made report. If the client approaches us and says, hey, I have compiled this particular liquidity dashboard in Excel for the past 10 years, and I want a report in your tool, in your solution, to look exactly like that, we can do it. And the third pillar, and now this goes back to our Azure infrastructure, is what we call our Numentia Data Cube. Now, we already started developing this a couple of years ago, before all of our solutions ran on Azure. And it was already very helpful because what does it do? It's basically a connection to our database, which is refreshed several times a day. It's not real time, but I would call it near time. And it allows corporate treasurers to connect to the database via the cube using different tools. One of the tools is Microsoft Excel. So within minutes, plus a few settings by friendly IT colleagues on the company's side, a few minutes, and you can just plug into all the data you compile in our TMS using Microsoft Excel. Second option, use any other BI tool, for example, Microsoft Power BI. And now this is where it gets interesting, because now that we are on this common Microsoft Azure cloud, it's even easier to connect a client's maybe already pre-existing Power BI tenant, their pre-existing Microsoft cloud area, so to speak, to the data in our TMS. And what that allows them to do is create a dashboard, for example, the group treasury liquidity cockpit, or the group treasury bank account cockpit, the group treasury cash dashboard. Create that once and then publish it across the entire organization.
So a few things here, Alex. First of all, remind me to never send you a pie chart of any form.
That would be very nice.
It's not a thing that you might want to see. A few things to unpack here. First of all, I like how you emphasize on the importance of properly visualizing the data, because to make the link with something we talked about earlier, like AI. So for in order to drive proper AI solutions, you need to have proper data beforehand, like legacy data, historical data. And then when it comes to reporting, you need to have a clear view on that data, because especially nowadays, you mentioned it earlier, a company can have many bank accounts in hundreds, in thousands, depending on the size. It's not just, hey, I have the proper data here and it's clean, it has been like worked and so on. It's like, how do I make sense of that data? How I read it? How can I have clear visibility on the information points that are going to be important for my decision and not just say, yes, we have the latest data. Another thing you mentioned is real-time/near-time. That's something we hear a lot, because obviously it's all the hype and it's kind of a reflection of the society we live in, to get a bit philosophical. But like, we want everything fast now, right? And CFOs and leadership might be like that as well. Like, hey, how come I don't have a visibility on my cash tomorrow? Like, I want to know what's coming in tomorrow. Yeah, fine. But again, how do you use all that now that it's on the table? How do you use all that to make right decisions out of it and not just say, hey, we are data-driven and real-time data-driven? One of my mentors said, and at one of my latest clients before I left consulting, told me that you can be doing an outstanding job, maybe the best job in the world. If you don't advertise it, if you don't market it, you won't get rewarded. And I think that's also what treasury reporting allows, because it's not just you making the proper decision, it's then reporting to your leadership saying, hey, here are the problems that we solved. It's not nothing. It's in hundreds of millions of dollars equivalent. And here is how we tackled it. And here are the benefits. Here are the savings. Like, to get to the bottom of it, here is the green number at the end of it. That's thanks to the work we've done. But also being able to report on it, let alone on a daily basis, is what really enable growth and the treasury department to thrive. You touched upon the data cube, super, super interesting. How about we link that to a story, Alex? Let's talk about Eaton Corporation, if you will then mind. So how are they utilizing data, the data cube, for creating customized dashboards and managing various aspects of the treasury? Can you tell us a bit about that, please?
Sure. In fact, I love talking about the Eaton project, first because I had the pleasure of actually being the project manager on Nomentia's side during the implementation. And second, Eaton is a highly innovative company. So they are a leading player in power management solutions, right? And you can imagine with all the talk about electronic vehicles and the power grids, renewable energy. So they kind of have innovation in their DNA. And that spirit, in my opinion, very nicely translates or carries over also into their treasury department. And so as a result of that, we had a phase one and phase two in our project, but in reality, it's still ongoing because they keep moving more and more legacy processes to our platform. For example, at the moment, we are rolling out workflows for managing and tracking user permissions. So of course, they don't only use Nomentia, they use other solutions as well. And after we have focused a lot in the phase one and phase two of our project on bank account management, signer management, electronic banking, user permission management, they then said, okay, that works really well, but why can't we also manage requests users have for resetting their password or for requesting an additional user permission in Treasury System X? And so we kind of built the solution. But going back to the topic of reporting and dashboarding and making sense of the data, again, the focus during the first phases of the project with Eaton was bank account management. When they started off, they had, I don't know the exact number, but let's say 1,600 bank accounts around the globe. And they had different tools to keep track of what's going on. They didn't have it in a TMS yet. So we came in and we created a set of workflows that allows them to have a tool for local users out there, no matter where they are, and request a new bank account, for example. Dear Group Treasury, I need a new bank account. Or dear Group Treasury, I need a new signer to be authorized on that bank account. All of that is running through Nomentia today. And now as a kind of a side effect or as a result of that, there was also the need to, as you just said, and I think you put it very nicely, to visualize that. How many bank accounts were we able to close in the last year? Because like most treasurers out there, the intention was to reduce the number of bank accounts. So what we did is we put our cube on top of all of these workflows, on top of our data. And Eaton is in a lucky position because they have one guy. I mean, let me restart that. I'm sure they have more than one guy, but there's one main guy. His name is Matt, and he's a real whiz when it comes to Power BI. So basically what we did is we said, hey, here's the cube. This is the link to Power BI, to your tenant in the cloud. We gave him one training. I think it was a couple of hours, not more than that. And then he went on to create a set of bank account management dashboards. I'm not exaggerating when I say, I think since that, maybe we provided 3 or 4 hours of additional training. And Eaton went on to create a set of dashboards with several pages, analyzing all aspects of accounts, signers, e-banking user permissions without needing us. And that's brilliant. Yeah, not that we don't want to create custom reports. We love doing that as well, of course. But I think it goes to show again that this is really, I think, the way forward. Yeah, the treasurer wants to be able to do stuff on their own without having to rely on a vendor. Yeah? And so that's why I really love this example.
So 100%, and that's back to one of our previous points, right? Like make it easy for the end user. Let me play the devil's advocate a bit here, Alex. Without a proper Power BI guru, wizard, you name it, how easy it is? Because I understand that it's Matt, if I got his name properly, could really nail it on his own. How easy is it to just say, hey, okay, I have Nomentia coming with the cube that's going to get on top of all my data. But then how do you make sense of it if I, like, for instance, Guillaume from Corporate Treasury 101, who's not that techie, easy? And how does it work then?
You mean you want some help creating your first pie chart?
please show me how to make a dashboard, but not a pie chart. I don't want a pie chart inside, Alex.
No, but, kidding aside, that's exactly why from day one, we kind of followed this two-way approach. So Power BI is something that you need some some knowledge about for sure, yeah, to be able to quickly create fancy interactive dashboards. This is why a couple of years back we said we also want the Cube to work with Excel, so that anybody, even regular treasury staff without BI background, are able to compile analysis, ad hoc reports, using the tool they know, everybody knows, which is Microsoft Excel. However, looking on the BI or Power BI side of things, and this also goes back again to this Azure infrastructure, I think what we will see more and more, and we are at the early stages, I think, of exploring that and working with that. If you think about the capabilities of AI, pretty sure that in the very near future, it will be possible to say, dear Copilot, just mentioning that because this is what Microsoft calls their AI assistant, dear Copilot, please show me how many bank accounts I closed last year. And magically, the Power BI dashboard will appear in front of you. Yeah, so fully agree with you today in 2024. Not everybody may have the different necessary skills to create the dashboards themselves, but maybe this is taken care of by a virtual assistant in 1 or 2 years. Until that is the case, you can still work with Excel. So I think there's really something for everybody here. Yeah, I say that's a fair assumption.
100%. No, that makes a lot of sense, Alex, I think, because it's like aiming for the long game, right? And it's not just saying, hey, here's what you can do today. Of course, treasurers will be interested into, okay, what can I do today? But it's also like, yeah, but it will take a couple of years, but then the objective is that. And the objective is like, talk to your TMS. Go ahead. Just say like, hey, what am I missing here? What's my foreign exchange exposure in that currency, in that country for the rolling 60 days? How many bank accounts did I close last year? How many should, according to the industry standards and like by how much I'm paying per year, estimated by my internal calculation, how much am I paying now and what are the potential savings? That's the kind of stuff that will be enabled later on. And I understand that the solution you're putting in place today is also aiming for that long-term game. So that's super, super interesting. It was focusing mostly on the bank account management here, but if we dig deeper a bit, Alex, can you elaborate on how can the Data Cube allow for better management of anything, right? Really treasury related, some of the stuff we mentioned earlier, for instance, cash flow forecasting or cash positioning or even FX exposure and so on and so forth. How do you enable that with the Data Cube exactly?
So in a nutshell, all the solutions that Nomentia offers are tied into the Data Cube. Now, with the exception of payments, to be fair, yeah, so payments information is not yet included in there, but we're working on that. But everything else that you just mentioned, cash flow forecasting, cash positioning or cash visibility, FX exposure management, even the management of trade finance instruments, guarantees, letters of credit, all the data that are compiled for these purposes in our solution can be analyzed via the Cube, or to put it differently, all of these modules are connected to the Cube, right? So to give you an example, another customers of ours located in Germany, they came from an Excel only world, though that's not correct. In fact, they had a different TMS in place, but the reporting capabilities of this other TMS were not that great. So we connected to this source system, we put our Cube on top, and they then went on to create their own treasury dashboard in Excel, in this case, giving them an overview of their financial status, cash position in one sheet, the results of the most recent cash flow forecast in another sheet. Right, there is customers of ours, they analyze their credit facility utilization by loans, derivatives, trade finance instruments using the Cube. So the principle is always the same. We compile the data from different sources in Nomentia, and then the Cube is the reporting layer, if you want, on top. Yeah, that's the idea. And as soon as Power BI comes into play, as soon as we think about our Azure infrastructure, that's when treasurers are then able to push this information out easily without having to manually download information, send out reports via email, just give people access to a Teams channel, to a SharePoint location where these dashboards, these reports are then automatically available. Yeah, that's kind of the idea, no matter what topic.
So you really got the data from that other treasury solution, incorporated them into the cube and allowed for proper reporting and dashboards for that client based on the data that was passing from their TMS through your cube onto their Excel.
That's correct.
Super interesting. Yep. So here it's just my very own curiosity. So it's not the TMS itself, the cube. It's something else. And any solution provided by Numentia is connected to that cube. But can I say, hey, I just want the cube from Numentia? Is it possible?
Yes and no. So the option you just described, it still needs us, or it still needs our solution, kind of to pull in the data, ingest it into our database structure, so that then the cube can be put on top. But you're not that far off, because that's exactly what some of our clients decided to do in the past, basically using our solution mainly as a reporting engine, kind of eliminating the shortfalls of their previous TMS. But then, good for us, typically, once they start working with our solution, and now that I know this is not a sales pitch and it's not going to turn into one in the last couple of minutes, but as soon as they start working with our tool and with a wider range of our system and modules, typically they want more. Yeah. So from some of these projects where we started off as the reporting layer at the top, we are now replacing the original TMS because they said, hey guys, you can't only help us with reporting, you do a whole lot of other things better than the other guys as well. Cash flow forecasting, for example. Yeah. And so now it's turned into this TMS replacement project since then, which of course a good development for us. Yeah.
100%. But that's back to the point we were making earlier about provide a great experience to the user, to the end user, make it easy for them to use. And yeah, I see how that can be a great foot in the door. Makes sense, because you start again back to one of the points where we were trying to explain, hey, modular solution are taking more and more space, because it's like, it's about solving one problem specifically, not the whole rip and replace strategy, but just like, hey, I have this problem, let's start by solving it. Oh, by the way, now it's done. How about we tackle the next problem, and so on and so forth. So makes a lot of sense. Alex, that was a great chat. Thanks a lot for coming on the show and walking through these three use cases that we've really digged into. So made it really, really interesting. Thanks a lot for that. Anything else you'd like to add to the different topics we touched upon?
Well, I think you just provided a very good summary, but if I can add to that, I would say my invitation to the listeners and to the group treasurers out there is get started. So don't wait for the magic bullet to solve all of your issues, or the magic tool to rule them all, so to speak. Yeah? Don't wait for AI. It will come, but there is plenty of opportunity now, and there's plenty of smart tools that can help you address your challenges today and make your life a whole lot easier. So if we go back to cash flow forecasting, just maybe critically check your current processes. Are they making good use of available data? Is it easy to use? Is it quick to change in case the next pandemic comes along? Let's not hope that this happened. Yeah. So just make sure you're prepared, and the same applies to all the other items that we mentioned today. Get started, give it a critical review, and then it would be a pleasure to start a conversation with you and see if maybe we can help.
Awesome. And speaking of which, if people would like to learn more about you, Numentia, what you guys do, where should they go?
I would suggest check out numentia.com. because this is where you will learn more about our solution, more about the people behind it, see what our customers have to say, and learn about their experience in working with us and using our tools. And yeah, maybe also check out the upcoming treasury events that we will attend, so that we can have a chat in person, come and say hi, and we are more than happy to have a chat. And even better if this could turn into a collaboration in the future. Yeah? So thanks a lot for listening in. And thanks again to you, Guillaume. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Alex. It was great. And that's a wrap. We'll put all the links in the description. Thank you so much for listening till the end and looking forward for the next episode. Thanks a lot, Alex.
Thank you.